This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
OO Portland. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub. Independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello and welcome to Words and Pictures on KBOO. This is your animation and comics artists show on Portland Radio. I'm SW Conser, your host, and today we are live in the studio for the next half hour with our returning guest, Matt Boers. He's a local cartoonist who's been to Afghanistan and Haiti. He has been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and won the Herblock Prize. He's back in the studio for the third time. Welcome back, Matt.
Hey, what's happening? Thanks for having me back.
I think you are only your appearances have only been exceeded by those by Bill Plimpton, who's been in the studio four times. So it's great to have you here. And we want to pimp your book here. It's out recently. You're about to have a digital version of it, but this is a nice, thick, soft cover. It's beautifully put together. It's called Life Begins at Incorporation, Cartoons and Essays by Matt Boers. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, well, I kickstarted it last year, because publishers told me that anthologies don't really sell well. So I went to Kickstarter and ended up raising $35,000 for it. And so it's a collection of my best work from over the last 4 or 5 years. But I wanted it to be more than just an anthology of comics that have already been printed. So I added about 22,000 words. Of kind of humor, political essays. So it's kind of organized into chapters by, things I cover a lot. So we got Obama killing people with drones, taking away lady rights. I got a chapter on the trip to Afghanistan and one where I'm making fun of editorial cartooning.
Yeah, there's certainly some material from Afghanistan. And we've had you on the show before with Ted Rall, your fellow cartoonist, who took you to Afghanistan back a few years ago. And if folks go on their search engine and enter KBOO Matt Boers, and that's Bors, you can find those conversations and listen to those. Tell us again about... Just give us a little bit of background about how you decided to take off and just be an unembedded reporters, you and Ted Rall, in Afghanistan, spent several weeks there.
Yeah. Well, it was all his idea, really. He's been there a bunch of times and has a book coming out about Afghanistan and the trip we went on and everything. So I was kind of just tagging along because I wanted to kind of dip my toes into the comics journalism waters, I guess. So I didn't really do anything... huge or super substantial for it, but I kind of wrote about the trip for the book and included some shorter comics I did.
Oh yeah, so let's read a cartoon from the book so that people know what they're getting into here.
Yeah. Well, this is all right. So you have to understand that that people at the time, this is summer 2010, we had people flipping out about the Ground Zero mosque, right? Because Muslims aren't allowed
to be. This is in New York, yeah.
Right, you have to build your mosques it's a mile or two away from Ground Zero or something to be appropriate. And then also we had that crazy guy in Florida talking about burning Qurans, which was nice. The Afghans appreciated that. And then there was one. Oh, and then so this is about Obama. Whether he's a Muslim or not, which some people still are a little bit unsure about. But in 2010, it was an even bigger issue. So there was a news item that I saw while I was over there that was something like most Americans, or 40% or something, weren't sure, was the quote. You know, they weren't sure whether he was a Christian or not. So I decided to ask some people on the streets of this little town in called Chaghjaran. So the comic says, most Afghans may be illiterate, but they aren't dumb. And this guy I talked to says, Obama's father is Muslim, but he is Christian. Everyone knows this, yes? My informal street poll in the rural town of Chaghjaran shows them to be more knowledgeable and tolerant than Americans. And this other guy says, he is Muslim, or he's not a Muslim, but it doesn't matter because we're all brothers. I ran into a few Yahoos denying reality, and there's this guy saying, Obama says he is Christian, but I know in my heart he is a Muslim. And this last guy, most were puzzled as to why half of Americans don't know their own president's religion. And this guy says, Americans can read but choose not to. You have strange culture.
Yes, it's very reminiscent of that story that the Daily Show did in Iran a couple of years ago, where they went over there and talked to people in the street who knew, who followed American news more closely than the average American did.
Yeah, well, another thing that's sort of interesting and related that I write about in this section is that a lot of Afghans still don't really know what the deal is with 9/11, and didn't at the time, right? So they did this poll where in rural outlying areas of Afghanistan, a lot of people really didn't even know what the heck they're talking about. Here we go. A 2011 survey by the International Council on Security and Development of 15 to 30-year-old men living in rural southern Afghanistan, the most violent region of the country, revealed that 92% had no clue what, quote, this event foreigners call 9/11 is. This guy, 16-year-old Abdul Ghattar, told the Wall Street Journal, never heard of it. I have no idea why the Americans are in my country.
Wow.
So it gives you a little bit of an idea of what we're you know, trying to communicate our hearts and minds message.
Wow. Well, your comic strip, which actually locally it runs in the Mercury, the Portland Mercury, and a number of other weekly papers around the country, as well as online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a number. Okay. Two, maybe. Yeah. I think I get more play online now. But yeah, thankfully the Mercury runs me.
Well, the strip is it still called Idiot Box, by the way?
I think the Mercury runs it as that. Okay. But I kind of, yeah, don't refer to it as that. It's just like all weeklies need to have a title for strips, and that was one I probably shouldn't have started out with, but I did when I was in college.
Well, unlike so many editorial cartoonists, your comics don't talk down to an audience. You know, there's certainly the average editorial cartoonist is a very well-educated person, but they feel like they have to just dumb down everything. And like some of the great improv comedians, you know, you believe in working at the top of the intellect here. So you've done a lot of foreign politics and a lot of issues that have very complex elements to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I got to keep myself entertained doing this. I only want to do cartoons that I feel strongly about or that I care about doing. You know, it's like, there's like that mold of daily editorial cartooning where you sort of process the day's news through the editorial cartoon filter and kind of plop something out. And, you know, it's like, well, Tiger Woods is in the news and Egypt is in the news. So Tiger's in the sand trap, and the sand trap is democracy or something. And then Tiger Woods is the Muslim Brotherhood. I don't know. So, yeah, I try not to do stuff like that. You know?
Yeah, there's a whole chapter, by the way, in Life Begins at Incorporation, where you just go after lazy editorial cartoonists, where you have the standard Halloween cartoon, for example, and it's just like, here, put a label on this, and here's a set of labels you can do for that. But the book here, it's called Life Begins at Incorporation. Our guest today is Matt Boers on Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And this book, I remember last year when or a couple of years ago when you were on the show and you were talking about you're getting the Herblock Prize, which I believe had about a $15,000 award, and you said it was more than you actually made doing cartoons so
yeah,
that year. So I hope you're doing a little bit better this year. I know you're getting a lot of play on various, there's a lot of news venues where you've been appearing, such as CNN.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, doing a little better. I just kind of banked that Herblock money for a rainy day or when I want to do a graphic novel or something. But yeah, I've been hustling my my freelance and you know, working for a lot of online outlets now. I think it's finally come to a point where some of them want to pay. I've done a few comics for Medium.com, and then I got this huge one on CNN that ran.
Right, you've been trying for months, if not years, to convince CNN to run some cartoons. And well, I don't know, maybe the book gave you a little bit of entree because they actually listened to you this time and tell us what happened.
Yeah, well, it's always kind of a struggle for whatever reason to explain to like words editors and stuff like that, which they all are pretty much, to run comics, especially online, just because outlets have like no budget because they just, you know, they just want to run like side boob slideshows and, you know, GIF articles and stuff like BuzzFeed and Huffington Post. So anyway, I did this long comic that's a kind of like a vertically scrolling editorial cartoon. It's called Can We Stop Worrying About Millennials Yet? And it's about, it's like a rebuttal to all of this like generational slander that
right, this is the baby boom return, what do you call it, the boomer echo generation.
Yeah Well, you're X, right?
I'm Gen, you know? X, yes.
So this stuff isn't new. It's kind of was said about Gen X too, but you know, it's like we're lazy, and now it's like the technology thing, so we're all on our phones. And then this thing that I keep hearing, you know, we all get trophies. Our parents gave us a bunch of trophies, so now we're entitled, and we think like that we should get a job. You know.
Well, sure, we'll take a job. You know.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind a job actually in editorial cartooning, and had I been born 20 years earlier, probably could have had one. But that's.
Yeah, well, the CNN piece is actually blowing up. It just in a few days, it's gotten, you said, about 100,000 Facebook hits.
Yeah.
Shares.
I think it's going on a million reads from what they told me, which is great. And definitely probably the most popular comic I've ever done, which felt good because, you know, they have this, their whole kind of like staff, writer, like commentariat people, like, you know, David Frum and Donna Brazile, who kind of like do the shows, and then they write a weekly column online, and they get paid, you know, and all this stuff. And so it was nice to, like, after years of trying to convince people that like comics are popular and they should pay decent to have original comics on their website, to just kind of like blow all the traffic numbers for all those people like away by lunchtime on the day it went live.
So nice.
I mean, besides you're gonna like this, all right, I asked what of their opinion pieces, what is the most highly trafficked one, because I wanted to blow it away. And they said that I beat almost everything, but there's this one article that has 500,000 Facebook shares, 500,000, and the title of it is "Parents, Don't Let Your Daughters Dress Like Tramps." So I
couldn't beat that one.
That's so shareable.
Well, we were talking about making a living as an editorial cartoonist, and in our last show last month, and folks can go to, you know, if their favorite search engine and type in KBOO Jack Oman, O-H-M-A-N, there was a farewell to Portland by the Oregonian editorial cartoonist Jack Oman. Back in December, he left for Sacramento, the Sacramento Bee, and before he left, gave a sort of a valedictory address at the Oregon Historical Society, where he was just effusive in his praise for you. But he also told stories about, you know, 30 years ago, before he came to the Oregonian, he would make enough in a month to buy a new car. You
know? No, I know. I actually remember sitting there hearing that and just thinking to myself, like, Jesus. Jack is a good friend. He actually wrote the intro to this book. So, and he's down in Sacramento now doing great work. And I think that we can safely say that he made a really good jump there when he did, because the Oregonian just laid off 100 people. And I don't think there's any doubt that in his mind, or I don't, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, he probably would have been among them.
He took a little package and.
No, that's what I'm saying he did a little hat trick there, and it, you know, it's really, there aren't a lot of papers hiring, so Sacramento was hiring because sadly Rex Babin had died, he hopped over there, and is probably after that round of Oregonian layoffs pretty happy with his decision.
Well, again, he was very you know, he was just praising you left and right as one of the great young cartoonists, very innovative. And I think that...
I'm like the only one, so it's like, not young cartoonists, but people doing political cartoons.
Yeah,
I mean, there's virtually no one.
Still in your 20s, and you did some work for the Sunday Oregonian for a little while until they cut back on the work that you were doing for them, some local cartooning.
Well, yeah, if you remember, you might remember, like, a couple years ago when the paper was a little bit thicker and cost a lot less and had more sections on Sunday. And I used to do local cartoons for the standalone Sunday section, the opinion section. And that was really great because, when I kind of do cartoons about, you know, Obama blowing Muslims up with drones, I don't think he reads it, unfortunately. But, you know, you do a cartoon about Sam Adams, you know, he probably reads it. He probably reads the Sunday Oregonian. So that's cool. You know, I like local cartoons, but it's still, you can't syndicate them, right? So it's like you kind of have to get paid to actually draw them. So they axed that and, you know, It's a good strategy. It's obviously working out for them. Axing the paper, you know, 3-day-a-week delivery, dumping 100 employees, and
right.
I even heard that they got rid of a soda machine in the newsroom, an unauthorized soda machine. So, you know, just trimming that budget down and making a great product.
Well, you know, I can just remember. I think many of our listeners might be familiar with Orange County, California, just south of L.A. where the Orange County Register, well, it's interesting because, I have a lot of family down there. It's actually becoming a more diverse area with a lot of Latino and Asian communities expanding.
Well, they got to have people come in and wash their dishes for them.
But the Orange County Register is this rock-ribbed Republican, you know, very partisan outfit that, and the Oregonian decided to take on this guy, N. Christian Anderson, a couple of years ago as publisher.
What Portland needs... is definitely a paper moving to the right. You know,
yeah.
I mean, we're a pretty conservative city. We only have one daily, so you know, we need a kind of contrarian voice out there for all these liberals. I mean, I don't understand what that strategy is at all. You know, I'm fine with having like diverse opinions on the editorial page and stuff like that. But you know, after Jack left, they started running these terrible editorial cartoons, you know, like these conservative pap, and their new editorial page editor, from what I hear, is a very nice guy, but he's also a lot more conservative than the previous editor. And then, you know, they just got rid of David Sorensen, which is like an outrage, I feel. Like he was the great liberal columnist at the Oregonian, and they've dumped him. So, you know, it's like, what are they doing?
Well, I don't want to completely dump on the Oregonian because there's wonderful people there. Randy Rasmussen is an unbelievable talent. There's Christy Turnquist. There's Marty Hughley. Wonderful, wonderful people. But then you know, in the last couple of years, if you look at the front page and read just the news stories, what are meant to be news stories, they look like the editorial page of the National Review, for heaven's sake. And you know, that hasn't been a great strategy, obviously, because they've stopped being a daily, or they're going to stop being a daily this year in October, and just go to 4-day-a-week home delivery.
Yeah, well, you know, there's economic realities at newspapers, and you know, working in a giant building and employing hundreds of people is really tough, and paying for all that. On the other hand, you know, it seems that a lot of the newspapers these days are run by people who really don't care much about journalism and care more about, you know, like dismantling these organizations and cashing them out.
Well, you know, I'll give a personal story. Back in 1996, I was a stringer for Pacifica at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, back when you were in short pants, I'm sure. And we had this tiny
getting
little booth.
Getting trophies.
Yeah, right, getting trophies. And right down the hall from us was this huge, huge Newhouse area where, and it was all Newhouse. There wasn't the Oregonian or anything like that. It was just this whole group of people. So it was kind of like, a feed, you know. You'd have the few political reporters who were left, the few investigative reporters who were left, would just be sort of going into the hall and doing wire service things, because this was well before the internet took over things. I mean, LexisNexis was there, but at the time, newspapers were seen as cash cows. Their companies, their parent companies, wanted double-digit profits from them, you know, every year. So instead
reasonable.
Of yeah, so I mean, that's the period of time when the foreign bureaus were getting axed, when the investigative reporters were given, you know, the door. So, you know, the idea that the internet killed print journalism is a little bit you know, is a little bit hard to swallow.
Yeah, well, there's certain it's certainly spitting on the corpse. You know, we got places like BuzzFeed, which are just kind of degrading the idea of media to the absolute bottom point. I mean, there's this story on BuzzFeed this week. It was the story of the Egypt Revolution told in Jurassic Park GIFs. So it was a list of, you know, it had a few sentences and then it had a GIF from Jurassic Park. Like, oh, at the beginning of the revolution, everyone was excited and it shows. And then there's like a GIF of them like pulling into Jurassic Park and being in awe. And then it goes on. And, you know, the T-Rex is Morsi or something. I don't know. And it was, you know, people, besides the fact that it's sort of like tasteless and offensive and people are still dying and we're talking about, you know, there's this article that's like, oh, hey, people are being shot in the street. That reminds me of this dino movie I saw when I was 10 because I can't talk about anything without like a pop culture reference. But like what it's like, basically Idiocracy has happened. It exists. And BuzzFeed actually this morning ran my millennials piece for CNN. They published it, which was news to me, and in full. You know, so instead of asking them to take it down, though, I just sent them an invoice for $750 and said thanks. And then the editor got back and said they removed it. And I said, oh, you don't have to. Keep it up. And let me know about the payment. You know, and that's just, that's like a media strategy now, and is like you just kind of, you know, collect, vacuum up things and you run them and repurpose them, rewrite articles, post whatever free content you can, you know, have some lowly paid intern with a master's degree in poli-sci, you know, doing Jurassic Park GIFs. It's atrocious.
Well, if you want to see Matt's recent cartoon for CNN legitimately, you can go to your search engine and type in CNN Millennials Matt Boris, and that's B-O-R-S. You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'm here with local cartoonist Matt Boris, who has been to Afghanistan, has been to Haiti. You work with some folks at Cartoon Movement, bringing foreign cartoonists who are up and coming to a wider audience. That's a great thing, too.
Well, not anymore.
Not anymore. Oh, I'm sorry to, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, no, they still exist, but the comics journalism thing was kind of pooled, that doesn't exist anymore. The money wasn't there, unfortunately, because we did publish some really great stuff. Although I don't want to speak too soon or jump the gun on anything that isn't solid, but I'm gonna be editing comics journalism again soon. It's not super solid, so I don't want to say for who, but I think I'm gonna be doing that again within this year.
Well, you you certainly, in Life Begins at Incorporation, your book here, there's a lot of really amazing commentary, essays that you've written, sort of introducing the sections that you have. One of them is about a comics character called the Avenging Uterus, who is this adorable superhero. By the way, you know, one thing that I'll say about your comics, they're certainly hard-hitting, but, you know, they're not mean-spirited. In fact, I'm reminded of Robert Crumb, who even his villains in his comics were kind of schlubs. Yeah. You kind of felt for them. You know, all these characters, even sort of the evil overlords or the guy in the jarhead haircut, they're all sort of adorable. You draw everybody so cute and adorable.
Okay. Well, you know, I can't really say that it's anything calculated. I guess it's just kind of like the style I settled into or whatever.
But your Avenging Uterus character came along during all of the debates in state houses about how to keep women from having reproductive rights. And this has become very popular. You've got a T-shirt that people can get with the Avenging Uterus on it.
Yeah, you know, I've always kind of, after I did it, I kind of realized that I've been probably doing it wrong for the last 10 years by not having recurring characters because, you know, I'm just like drawing Obama and this and that and never having characters. So then I did this one with this character that with no intention of it being recurring or whatever. But it was when Michigan State Rep. Lisa Brown was basically censored for, there was a debate on birth control or abortion. And she said vagina. She said something about regulating her vagina on the floor. And that was deemed like offensive or whatever, you know, so by men, right, of course. So then in the comic, you know, I have this, the Avenging Uterus pops in and just starts, you know, beating up all the guys in the legislature and saying vagina, 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 vagina over and over. And like people loved it so much. I was like, yeah, all right. Okay, you know, I figured, you know, you kind of need an anthropomorphic uterus to kind of deal with some of these some of these idiots we have talking about, you know, what it is, legitimate rape and all these other things that kind of pop up. Like every month or two now, there's like some outrageous, terrible thing said or done about like women's reproductive rights in this country.
And there's a great rogues gallery of villains who are characters that the Avenging Uterus is standing up against, like Misogyno.
Yeah, well, this is like one of the parts of the book, like the writing, that is kind of new to the book. So it's not just all like reprinted comics. So yeah, there's like this rogues gallery. I kind of did it like origins, like superhero origins, you know, like in the back of old trading cards, if you used to see those with like their power levels. So yeah, I kind of did... it's like misogynist villains or something that kind of get, you know, cover a different aspect of misogyny or something. So there's like Misogyno. He's kind of like a bro pickup artist type dude with like a fedora and a gold chain. And then there's Dr. Slut Shamer, who's, let's see.
He has the invasive wand.
Well, yeah, he has the mandatory transvaginal ultrasounds as his kind of henchmen, which are just like robot. Invasive robots. Then there's 75% of what a man makes man, and his power levels: intelligence 8, stock portfolio 4, income 10, privilege 7. And then there's Fetus Face, who I think is my favorite. He's just he's a abortion rights protester who, well, the origin, he says, abandoned in a dumpster at birth. At least according to his fantastical About Me page on his prolific blog, Stan Kroger developed a passionate opposition to abortion and a, quote, deep desire to protect God's little angels. He aims to create as many children as possible in his own life. And it goes on to say that Fetus Face can be found bellowing insults every morning at 6 a.m. sharp outside the local women's health clinic, except on Sundays when he breaks for coffee and prayer.
The book is called Life Begins at Incorporation, Cartoons and Essays by Matt Boris. And we want to give a shout-out here to your editor, Sarah Merck. Sarah was on the show a couple of months ago. She's working on a project right now called Comics for Change, and she's one of the editors at the locally based Bitch magazine. So she went through a lot of many thousands of words in putting this book together and helping you out.
Yeah, she edited the whole book. You know, because that was part of the thing with the Kickstarter money is that I wanted this to be a great book. So, you know, I hired a layout person, I hired an editor. So Sarah's great, helped make my prose better and funnier and all that stuff.
And you're working on another book, is that correct? Some of the stuff that wouldn't fit in Life Begins at Incorporation.
Yeah, that was the deal with the Kickstarter, was that if I hit 30,000, I would do a second book.
Which is pretty amazing. You have a lot of fans, obviously. You get a lot of fan mail, you get a lot of hate mail, but the fan mail makes it worth it.
And well, so the second book is basically going to be, you know, it just... When I have enough material, I'm going to do another one, right? So, you know, this millennial piece I did for CNN, I'm going to kind of cut it up because it's this kind of long scrolling comic. I'm going to cut it up. It'll fit on 5 pages or whatever. You know, do some more writing with things that have happened since then. So, like, I got to do NSA. I've been hammering away on doing comics about the, you know, Orwellian prison program under Obama that's totally legit, according to him. So, you know, stuff like that. So whatever's been going on over the last year will make it into the book, and that won't come out till next year though.
What kind of other projects have you got up your sleeve? Anything that you can talk about?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna do the CNN thing was a huge success, so I'm gonna do another comic for them about the evils of unpaid internships.
Ah, so yes.
I sort of have a I've never actually worked an unpaid internship, thank God, but they've sort of proliferated to the point of absurdity. I think there's 500,000 of them in America. And, you know, they were recently ruled to be, one of them for Fox movie studio was ruled to be illegal because they were just basically having assistants.
Yeah, getting coffee, not learning anything.
And calling it an unpaid internship. I'm an extremist on unpaid internships, though. I don't even care if there's educational value. You still have to pay your rent and buy food. So, life experience or educational experience or whatever, or professional apprenticeship or whatever, that's fine, but you actually need money too.
So let's see, how can folks get a copy of Life Begins at Incorporation? It's a really big 230-page book with chock full of cartoons and essays by Matt Boris. How can people find out more about your work?
Well, I mean, Portland, it's at Powell's and it's at most comic shops, and then it's definitely at my website too, mattboris.com.
MATTBORS.com. Once again, in the studio here, Matt Bors, local cartoonist. You've heard him here first over the last couple of years. And when he breaks out and becomes a household word, you can say that that you were listening in at KBOO when that happened.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
And this has been Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. Thanks to all our listeners today at 90.7 FM and on the web. The audio from the show will be available later today at kboo.fm/words and pictures. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
And you're tuned to Community Radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM and 91.9 FM, Hood River in the Gorge, 104.3 FM, Philomath and Corvallis, K220 HR Hood River, and K282 BH Philomath.